Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, for the second session this morning. We have Kekua Hanman from the University of Hawaii at Hilo, who's going to be presenting on the Halo Hula. It's a linguistic richness documented, analyzed, and revised. Kekua.
Me e nākānaka i akuakua i Honolulu nei, i keia mokupuni o Ahu Kaku i Hewa. Ka poe o iwi, maina aina like ole, ka poe kālai o lelo, ka poe imina o ao, ka poe kama aina, ka poe malihini. Aloha nui kako. Aloha. Aloha. Mahalo nui for attending this presentation, Sunday morning. It's very important that we're, especially as kama aina, children of this land, to share with you all of the richness of our culture and our language. So this particular topic, the Halo Hula, is a traditional hula school. And for many of you who come from many different parts of the world, you may be familiar with this image of the lovely hula maiden, hula. But when we look at its traditional aspects and the importance of it, it's very important for us to look at the relevance of the teachings that went on in the hula school and its relevance to education today, and how we continue to hold on to our language and our culture in the year 2015. So before I get into the meat of my presentation, as is common here in Hawaii and with other indigenous people, just a short introduction before we go any further. O ke kua harmen ko ui noa, ko u one hanau. I was born in Wailuku, Maui. My aina hanai, I was raised in Honokowai and Kihei, Maui. Hihio is the name of my family from Honokowai. My grandmother, Hana Hihio Serrano, was a native speaker. My parents are Jeff and Nani Harmon. I am the hiapo, the eldest of three children. My wife, Pelehonua Mea Harmon, is also a Hawaiian language speaker. And she teaches at Kekulo Navahi Oklani Opu'u in Keaau. And Keaau is where we raise our three children, Kalamanamana, Kaumoali'i, and Nali'ipo'ai Moku. And we raise all of them in the Hawaiian language, as the Hawaiian language being the primary language of our home. In this picture here, we have a picture of Princess Ruth Ke'elikolani, whom our College of Hawaiian Language is named for. She's a very stalwart woman who believed in the importance of traditional language and culture. So even in this day and age, she serves as a very good role model for us and this understanding the importance of Hawaiian language and culture. For my post-secondary education, the majority of my education was here at Kahaka Ula o Ke'elikolani. So in many ways, I give mahalo and respect to my kumu, Larry Kimura, Kalena Silva, Pila Wilson, Kawanoe Kamana, and the other instructors there who have played such a big role in my life in understanding the importance of Hawaiian language education. So in many ways, raised by these people within this type of institution, post-secondary institution. Just to give you folks a brief snapshot of where we are in Hawaiian language revitalization, this is from the census data collected between the years 2006 and 2010. 4,902 speakers, 5 to 17 years of age. 11,826 speakers, 18 through 64 years of age. And then 2010 speakers, 65 years and over. It's important for us to remember, though, when we look at this data, when people respond to this type of census, that it's really up to the individual to decide whether or not they speak Hawaiian at home. And within this range of data might be just words, could be a couple phrases, or it could be a full conversation in Hawaiian. So with that, it doesn't really give us a clear indication of how much Hawaiian is being spoken at home. More than 10,000 fluent Hawaiian language speakers in Hawaii, or less than 1% of the population. This data came from Larry Kimura back in 2013, which also tells us, although we're growing in the amount of speakers here in Hawaii, starting with the Punana Leo back in the early 80s, it's grown significantly from, you know, the more 2,000 speakers, but we're still, with the rest of the population here in Hawaii, still less than 1%. But the Hawaiian medium schools have played a big part in producing new Hawaiian language speakers. So more than 2,400 students enrolled in K-12 Hawaiian language schools presently. So the schools still continue to play a big role in introducing young children from infancy all the way to the college level, along with their families, Hawaiian language, and also the behaviors and customs that go with Hawaiian language education. So the challenge that comes with this, as we all know, in revitalizing language and culture, our ability to maintain language and cultural traditions in an ever-changing landscape. We may be very familiar with traditions, but our ability to hold on to them and continue to make them relevant in this day and age is quite a challenge. So how do we take a traditional practice and make it relevant to a modern day educational setting? How do we maintain its relevancy? And that is where documentation plays a very, very important role. So for the halau hula, and this is one of our traditional practices that we have quite a bit of information on, in comparison to other traditional practices, Hawaiian traditional practices. So it's a well-documented tradition. Within this particular sketch here, which was actually one of the sketches sketched by Captain Cook and his crew when they first came to Hawaii in Kailua. And although it's a black and white sketch, some of the areas are a little fuzzy, it does give us information that written documentation does not give us. We can look at this. We can look at the type of costuming that these dancers have. Whether or not, although it's hard to see, we can try to see whether or not the drummers or the dancers are male or female. We can also look at who the people in the audience are, what kind of people are actually watching this, who this person on the left-hand side may be with the sitting down. We could maybe infer from that that's probably ali'i or someone of chiefly status. All these different things in looking at this type of document to try and piece together these pieces of the puzzle. A traditional practice, hula. The hula tradition is one of the oldest continued Hawaiian traditions we have today, as documented in exhaustive research by Elizabeth Tatar and Adrian Kepler in their research on ancient Hawaiian drum dances. In 1778, Captain Cook arrives in Hawaii on Waimea Kauai, and his crew witnesses the hula there. One hula is a hula with sticks held in the hand and a treadle board, and the other dance uses a feather rattle. So with this, for those who dance hula, you hear this description, and we can figure it's probably a hula kala'au, a stick dance with the papahehi, the treadle board, and even the feather rattle, that it's probably a hula uli uli. In 1779, Captain Cook and his crew witnessed a dance in Kona, Hawaii. According to the writer David Samuel, they strike their hands on the pit of their stomach smartly and jump up all together at the same time, repeating the words of a song and responses. So for this particular dance, although the description, you have to kind of paint a picture in your head of what this may have looked like. But we can tell from this that maybe doing something in unison was very important, to do it together. And then the ability to repeat the words and to do the chant while they're dancing also gives us a good indication of how this type of dance may have been performed. Hula is a tradition that has been passed down from one generation to the next, as documented in Hula Historical Perspectives, written by Dorothy Barrera, Marion Kelly, and the preeminent Hawaiian scholar Mary Kovena Pukui. Hula traditions are also documented from some of the oldest family traditions, such as the hula pahu tradition of Keahiluahine's family from Kauai that goes before 1820 and the coming of the missionaries. So, for us looking at these traditional chants and how they may have been done presents a challenge here, especially in looking at how we take something that's very old and understand how we use it today, to understand its function. So an entrance chant from antiquity. We call traditional practices Ike Ku'una. So the traditional practice of Hawaiian chant was something that was done by everyone in days of old. Chants were done to appease the gods, to wake someone up in the morning, to pick greenery in the forest, to ask for entrance, and for choosing a suitable log to build a canoe. Chants were used in many different functions and in all aspects of life. An entrance chant is one of the many type of chants that were done in ancient Hawaii. This particular practice comes from the traditional Hawaiian education of the halau, or the hula school, where you must ask permission daily, whenever you enter this halau, to enter the school and receive the learning there in a very formal way. This particular custom of chanted requests was adapted into Punanaleo, the Hawaiian language nest preschools, in the 1980s, and has since expanded into schools conducted in Hawaiian and into Hawaiian language classes. So when we look at the early founders of the Punanaleo language preschools, and being scholars themselves within that particular period of time, and trying to incorporate these old practices at a very early age, was something important for them. Interesting too, when we look at the early founders, you know, there are a few that have had halau training and who practiced, learned some of these things in hula school. As we know, the 1970s was quite an exciting time. I only hear stories from Larry Kimura about what went on during that period of time when they're, you know, just getting all excited about Hawaiian songwriting and you know, hula, speaking the language, all of this. But we owe much to what their excitement and their activity during that period of time to take something that's very old and to have the confidence to take that and then use that within the preschool setting for the students to start the day, every day, with this type of entrance chant. So this is a particular chant that's taken from Hawaiian literature, Kunihika Mauna. This is one of our oldest chants. And when we look at old Hawaiian language newspapers, and with all humility, in the Hawaiian language newspapers, we have one of the largest archives of Hawaiian language newspapers, documented Hawaiian language in the world, that we're very proud to have our language written in the newspaper. But these stories that were passed down from one generation to the next can be found in these Hawaiian language newspapers. So with that, within these stories that were passed down from one generation to the next, and we know that it goes beyond the 18th century, you know, a lot of these stories that are passed down orally. So with this chant, we know it's a very old chant that speaks about Hi'iaka going to Kauai. She's the youngest sibling of Pele, going to Kauai to fetch her older sister's lover, Pele, the goddess of the volcano, her lover on Kauai, called Lohi Aupo. But she faces a particular challenge there as she comes upon this hill area, Nono, and this obstacle that she faces, and she's seeking entrance, this pathway there. So this chant within that context shows us how she used that chant to gain access to this particular area. So this particular chant goes like this. Kunihita mauna ithala ie o iale ale la iwe lua. Pukia ela ithala ni tapapa ue o tawaitini. Ahala ia ela e no no nalo taibua atala ula mauka o kabae. Mai pai ta leo he ole ta hea mai e. So just to give you a mahalo. How that actually sounds. Yeah, the sound that goes with that. The lyrics are very important to us because when we look at songwriting and how this text was actually written, it's very different from the type of language that we use today. So as speakers in this day and age, it gives us an insight into what went into this type of mele or chant that was written. But the translation here As you see, the mountain stands steep in the calm. Mount Waiʻaleʻale seen from Mailua. So the setting is on Kauai. The ditch spanning plank is yanked up into the heavens to the top of Mount Kawaikini, obstructed from view by Nono Hill. So she's trying to get through this area. Kaipuhaʻa, the wide expanse of land, Mauka of Kapaʻa disappears. Don't hold back your voice. There is no call to enter. So coming upon this particular area, she's seeking some sort of voice, yeah? Some sort of voice. And then she, in the hula school actually, it's common, you use this chant and you wait for the response of your kumu, your instructor, to respond with a voice to allow entry. So this particular chant, ehe ike kanaka e kumu maloko, eha naia aia heva kawaha, ea no kaukulao kaleo, ahe leo vale no ai. Call out to the person to enter within, to be fed until his mouth can hold no more. Here is the tribute, the voice, and only the voice, yes indeed. So the importance of this voice that calls out and allows entry into this area to learn, it's not, you know, we look at this and think, oh, maybe that's food, but it's the knowledge that's going to be imparted from the instructor, the teacher, onto that student. Analyzing and reviving a tradition. So the tradition of the Mele Noi Komo, permission to enter in Mele Kahea, are brought into the modern educational setting. Each day starts with this type of practice of Mele Noi Komo Mele Kahea in our P20 Hawaiian Medium Education System. So for those of you who will be going on the field excursion to Hilo, Ke Kula o Navahi o Klani o Pu'u Punana Leo Hilo and the College of Hawaiian Language Kaka Ula o Ke'likolani, pay attention to this, yeah? The use of this type of chant. Within a mo'oki'ina or a routine that contextualizes our a'o pili uhane, spirituality, a'o lavena, nonverbal behavior, a'o olelo, language, and a'o ike ku'una, traditional practice, at a particular site with everyone fulfilling different responsibilities. So documentation, this is actually something that was documented in order for us, you know, the next generation after, and after all of these things that were put into use, into function and applied, that we remember the intent and the function of the use of the chant within this routine, this mo'oki'ina that was created. So just to give you an example here, within the first column we have hana, and I know it's kind of small, but that's the actual task that will be done within this routine. So the first one, to prepare the visitor who has arrived. This is when we greet people, this particular routine. To greet people, to get the visitors ready when they get there. To stand in a certain way, that we stand in order from our kupuna, from our elders within the college, to the other instructors, and then to our students. And then for each area, we have all the way to the end. And then this column, we have the responsibilities. Our male students and instructors having the responsibility of oratory and speaking. And then for our women, they have the responsibility of actually starting each chant that we go through. That is their responsibility. Some of the challenges that we're faced with, people are not raised with the language and these type of traditions at home. So much of this learning to know how to do this happens within the educational setting. Unifying all of the sites, making sure that at the preschool level, at the elementary, intermediate, and the college level, we're all doing this in a very similar way. And also recognizing the uniqueness of each site. As these places change, the growth of the school, and we understand the uniqueness. Documentation plays an important role in understanding the evolution of this practice. Because as we know, we can only remember so much, and then sometimes you forget, why are we doing this again? We're humans, yeah, we're humans. It's important for us to go back and look at the intent of this and understand why we do this. Because it is a practice, sometimes, as we know, when you do things over and over again, you know, sometimes you become robots, in a sense. And it's important for us to remember the spirituality that goes with this type of practice and the language. So the results that we have, that because of this type of routine, We have an increased relevance for the high proficiency in language, the importance of working together as a group. We cannot emphasize that enough, that we need each other. We need all of us in order to do this. A stronger Hawaiian perspective in relation to behavior and its connection to language. And then the role of spirituality and traditional practice in a modern day educational setting. So I think I stayed within my time limit. So we'll, at this point, I'd like to open this up for questions that you may have. Mahalo. Oh, Kahaka'ula o Ke'ilikolani. So the name of our College of Hawaiian Language, this actually comes from the saying Kahaka'ula o Kane. And we look at the venerable standards of Kane, the god Kane. But we take that this particular saying and we use the name of Princess Ruth Ke'ilikolani, the picture I showed to you folks, of her because of her standards and the way she lived her life in holding up these very high ideals for language and culture, especially in a period of time when she was faced with so many challenges to hold on to the culture and language. Mahalo. Yes. Mahalo for bringing that question up. I wanted to put it into the presentation, but I had to kind of finagle with that. But, you know, spirituality in this day and age, especially in a state education setting, can be very challenging. So even for within our college, you know, we recognize that people come from all different walks of life and have different religions. However, we do realize in connection with the language, as I shared with you folks earlier, spirituality is important. We cannot have our Hawaiianness, the essence of being Hawaiian, if we do not have spirituality. So with that, we encourage our students to, within our particular PICO setting, we congregate every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Students say a prayer many times, though it is a Christian prayer, because many of our prayers actually Christian influence. Hawaiians, once Christianity was introduced, they took to it quickly, and that became, a big part of their spirituality. So a lot of Christian prayers, but if students have, other walks of life, they're encouraged to do their prayer in Hawaiian, might not be to a Christian God, but to also to acknowledge this type of spirituality, something higher than themselves, and then to recognize the spirituality amongst us and with the land also. It's very important. Mahalo. Any other questions? I'm going to relate your question actually to what I presented today, in the sense that these, when we look at rituals and things that we've done for many, many years, that is an avenue for us to tap into that pride and that power that we may have been disconnected from for many years. So I think especially with the revitalizing of the Hawaiian language, you know, even for the early Punanaleo founders, that they realized that, you know, you can teach the language, you know, the sentences along with the words, that's one thing. But in order to really use the language in a relevant way that it makes sense, that you're using it for a particular function, such as this particular type of, you know, entrance and entering within the educational setting, that that I think played a big part in instilling pride again, that we do these things, we do these practices, especially in a very public setting. That's one thing that's that wasn't done before, especially even when we look at hula, because for many years, traditional hula practices lived within the home in the very kuaaina outback areas. You know, people didn't do traditional, nobody wanted to hear the chants. In Waikiki, here, nobody, especially when we look at the early 20th century and all the way even up into the 70s, there wasn't a lot of pride that was associated with these traditional ways of doing things. Model.
Kikua, it might be useful to describe the difference between hula and kahiko.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so when we look at, I could do a whole nother presentation on that. When we look at hula kahiko and hula awana, and that's actually a modern categorizing of the two different type of hula, that it's such a broad term when we look at modern day hula and ancient hula. But it does give us, it does help us in understanding what we consider to be the more modern day hula, especially when we look at costuming, the type of songs that go with modern day hula, the instruments that are used for modern day hula. You have more the ukulele, the guitars, you have upright bass, a lot of those type of hula. Whereas traditional hula, we have a lot of these instruments such as the drum, the gourd, kala'au, or the sticks that go with that. And a lot of times for those, for our more ancient dances, they're very simple in the sense that you folks saw that in that particular line of the chant, aheleu valeno, it's just a voice. The importance of the voice in hula. So our most ancient hulas, you may only have your voice and some gestures, and that's all you have for our ancient dances. So that gives you, a lot of times when we look at the more ancient dances, they're the simpler dances. You see more subtle nuances with the hands or with the facial expression. Yeah, mahalo, that's a good question. With Kamehameha schools? I am not really up to date with what they're doing right now. However, I know for as a school for Native Hawaiians, they've offered Hawaiian language courses in the past. And I know they're working, from what I've heard, what I've read in the news, and from other colleagues, that they're working on a more comprehensive type of Hawaiian language program within their education for their students, within their curriculum. Yes?
I'm wondering about, with the tourism that has come into Hawaii, mm-hmm.
That is actually, it's interesting that you bring this up, because when we look at the early 20th century, and some of you may be very familiar with our Hapa Haole songs, Blue Hawaiian Moonlight, I Wanna Go Back to My Little Grass Shack, all these type of songs that kind of capture this romanticism of Hawaii, that that just killed our Hawaiian language songs. I mean, a negative impact in that way. But you know, when we look back to that day and age too, we have a lot of talented musicians and people who may have practiced traditional things in their home, but playing here in Waikiki and dancing and playing music, did provide a livelihood for their family in that day and age. So there's this dualism that it was a, you know, bread and butter, provided money for some families, especially as an economy here in Hawaii. However, for traditional practices, it, you know, people weren't interested in that day and age. But I, we have a lot of hope, because I think in this day and age, tourists in general are looking for a more authentic type of hula dancing. So when they come to Waikiki, they want the real stuff. They want the good stuff. That hopefully we're moving more towards that. However, you know, people will always have romanticized notions of Hawaii, and yeah, that's part of the tourism industry. Yeah.
With that, I think we're out of time.
Okay.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.